Zhong Shui Kin is our guest. He's a professor, and he is in the zeitgeist. All right, we only got him for an hour. I'm going to try to shut up and let him talk, give us a presentation. He's very gracious at 6 a.m. where he's at in China, to, or whatever time it is, to give us this time. Predictive History on YouTube, predictivehistory.substack.com. So for stations that didn't carry us, you were talking about the fact you're classically educated, in Toronto and then at Yale, but you were using a false data set of what we were given instead of breaking out of that, to kind of paraphrase what you said. So leaving off there and then wherever you want to go with your big predictions that are coming true, I think it's safe to say Trump was tricked into this war, sold that it would dominate energy and all the rest of it, but that was only one layer of it. I want to get into why did the U.S. attack Iran? Why can't Trump negotiate a ceasefire? Why did Trump visit China? Is the U.S.-China grand bargain in the works? Is there a new realignment? Will Trump abandon Taiwan? Are the U.S. and China secretly collaborating to roll out an AI surveillance state? Is a civil war in the United States coming? Will Trump get a third term, as he's been talking about, or being the new Israeli prime minister? So, Professor, stop whenever you want, because I'll love to talk. But I want, if you can, for the time we have, you've got the floor here. Give us a presentation to wherever you want to go. Thank you so much.
Right. So the first thing that your audience should understand is that this war in Iran, it's a structural war, meaning that there are larger geopolitical forces at work to make this war possible. So it is not just the whim of one man. It is true that Trump was tricked into this war. And it is true that Trump is trying very hard to get out of this war because he understands the economic, political repercussions of this war. But I would say that there are different factions involved that want to make this war possible and want to prolong this war. So the first faction is the American empire, the deep state, the national security apparatus. And the reason why they want this war is that in order to maintain the empire, they need to be able to control energy flows. And after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, there's a real fear that Russia could unite the Eurasian continent, right? Create this grand alliance between Iran, Russia, and China. If that were to happen, then they could just trade amongst themselves. They could negate American naval power. And so that would basically cause a collapse because, unfortunately, right now, the U.S. dollar, it's a Ponzi scheme, and it relies on more and more nations buying U.S. treasuries. But for these past few years, more and more nations have been buying gold. And so with this Russian invasion of Ukraine, people have lost confidence in the American empire. They've lost confidence in U.S. treasuries. And so America was facing a fiscal crisis. So this war against Iran is to assert American control over key maritime choke points around the world, including the Strait of Hormuz, including the Strait of Malacca, the Strait of Gibraltar, the Panama Canal, the Cape of Good Hope, all the major choke points around the world. And by doing so, the hope is to force the entire world to rely more and more on American energy. Now that Middle East oil has been taken offline, China, Southeast Asia, Japan, South Korea have become much more dependent on American LNG and energy from the Western Hemisphere. So Trump recently visited China, and apparently they're going to sign a major deal in the next few weeks or the next few months, where China will purchase more and more American LNG to compensate for the loss of Qatar. Okay, so that's one element, the fact that America is trying to maintain the hegemony of the U.S. dollar and trying to save its empire from collapsing into a Ponzi scheme. Okay, that's the first element. Second element is the eschatological factor, in that you have many Zionists, both Christian Zionists and Jewish Zionists, who are embedded in the national security apparatus, and they believe that this war in Iran will start a chain of events that will ultimately lead to the second coming of Jesus, as well as the coming of the Jewish Messiah, and really the creation of the Greater Israel Project. So that's a second factor. And the third factor is that right now the American economy is not doing well. Trump is interested in a third term.
thanks for having me. Before I start, wanted to pitch a couple of the products there for the listeners. The bovine colostrum has been fantastic. My mom had tremendous results, similar to the results your mom had with her hair and skin. Methylene blue, the mental clarity, the focus has been amazing. I just found that I just needed to up the dose a little bit from the recommendation, and then that really hit. So definitely helps to support the broadcast. Alex, the reason you're so successful and the reason so many people chime in is because you have the best guests. That does include Victor Boot, but I will reference the legendary Gerald Celente. What does he say time after time? When there's nothing left, they take us to war.
The bovine colostrum is incredible. The methylene blue, you fund us. You're our funders, not the Israelis or the Muslims or the Russians or the U.S. government. You fund us at thealexjonesstore.com. And the new news site for all the feeds and articles is alexjoneslive.com. And on Rumble, rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. We'll be right back.
And if a war breaks out in Iran, it's a forever war, then that might give him the constitutional pretext in order to justify a third term. So I would say that there are much larger geopolitical factors at work, and we need to take these factors into account before we can fully appreciate how this war will develop.
And we have to look at your original predictions that came true. Maybe that's the time now. And the third one, that we've lost the war. And I totally agree with what you said is very nuanced. Trump was sold to block the IMEC corridor, to block China and India, and to stop the BRICS, but really it's only accelerated it. Now he's actually listening to the Pentagon, his advisors, and trying to pull out, but it looks like a day late, a dollar short, because it's already 86 days in, a little too late. He's already really hurt the dollar, hurt us worldwide. This is a disaster. Now he's run to China to do an alliance, hopefully to get out of this plan, because obviously us going down will create a world depression and get China too. So there is this Dan if you don't, old globalist bargain, that final piece that he ran away from, he's now running back towards.
I mean, that's exactly right. I think Trump is very much stuck between, is really stuck. So, you know, if he withdraws from the Middle East, which is really militarily the best strategy, what would happen is that Iran would dominate the Middle East. And so they would close off the Strait of Hormuz and collect tolls in order to rebuild the economy. GCC nations like the UAE and Saudi Arabia would be extremely vulnerable. Now, the GCC invests heavily in America through a system called the petrodollar, right? Where they sell their oil in U.S. dollars, and then they recycle these U.S. dollars back into the American economy by investing trillions of dollars into the AI sector, into the financial system by buying U.S. treasuries. So if Iran were to dominate the Middle East, then the petrodollar would collapse. Israel would not countenance a strong Iran, because Israel is very much concentrated on achieving the Greater Israel Project. It will not stop the war in Lebanon, which is crucial to a ceasefire between the United States and Iran. So for these reasons, Trump is really stuck where he is.
So bottom line, you're saying in the equation, it's Israel that is jackknifing the whole thing. And Israel's already saying, we're taking Lebanon, at least the south. They're already selling. Realtors are already trying to pre-sell houses as they just blew up 30,000 plus Christian homes. I mean, again, I don't have a hard on for Israel, but Israel has tried to come into the power vacuum in the U.S. and is literally engaged in the most maniac type behavior. Because if you look multi-steps ahead, they're a pariah, but they don't stop. What is Israel's calculus, Professor?
I think Israel is very much, the attitude in Israel is very eschatological. It's messianic. They believe that this is literally the end of days. They are very close to the return, the coming of their Messiah. And the series, they've already launched a series of events, a chain of events.
Exactly. So if you're in a cult, you don't look at second, third, fourth order events. You don't play chess. You don't think 50 years ahead or 20 years. You just, nope, we're taking over. That's it.
Right. And also, we have to remember, like, Gaza, from their perspective, it was very much a ritual sacrifice where they have, you know, commit themselves all in their eschatology. And so they can't stop now. They just have to finish things as
they are. Is that called Amalek, where they declared genocide?
Well, I think Amalek is their enemy. But I think the idea is that they want this war in the Middle East, because this will lead to a chain of events that will usher in.
But under Amalek, you kill everybody.
Well, because they're your enemy, right? Because it's either you or them. It's really a fight to the finish. They really believe that if they were to show mercy and clemency to the Palestinians, then when they grow up, when the children grow up, then it'll be much worse for them. And so they need to do it now, or in 10, 20 years' time, they might be finished as a society.
We talk about biting off more than you can chew. The United States dropped 7.6 million bombs on the Vietnamese, who won't give up to anybody ever. Not the Chinese, not the Japanese, not the French, not us. We only dropped 22,000 bombs on them. I mean, Israel's biting off more than it can chew, thinking all these people are just going to roll over. They think all the Middle East is going to roll over and let them take over?
Right. So unfortunately, in their cult, in their eschatology, the real world doesn't really matter. The material world doesn't really matter. What matters is relationship to God. So what they're trying to do is create a condition where the entire world is aligned against Israel. And at this time, when the entire world wants to destroy Israel, when anti-Semitism is rife throughout the world, when armies are marching against Jerusalem, then at this particular time in history, all the Jewish people around the world will feel tremendous regret for neglecting God in the past. They will open their hearts to their God, Yahweh. And at this time, Yahweh will heed their need. He will feel love for his people. He will forgive his people. And at this time, history will end. So unfortunately, according to the Kabbalistic tradition, according to the Torah, this is the condition that they must create in order to save the world, when all the Jewish people must sin to an extent that they seek God's forgiveness.
Wow, sounds like a death cult. So continuing then with these different pieces, you got Russia, you got China, you got the EU, you got what's left of the U.S., you've got Israel on this weird, you know, crusade or whatever. How do you see these forces tying together with your prediction? Well, I think it's basically happened because war of attrition, the mullahs didn't fall. War of attrition, they can hold the straight. Trump knows he's killing the economy. He wants an off-ramp, but Israel says they won't let the war stop. What is your prediction with the U.S.? I think at this time's lost the war. Then what unfolds out of this?
Right. So I think we are at a critical crossroads in our history where there are multiple outcomes. And I certainly hope that China and the United States can work together to maintain a status quo. They are working very hard in that regard. But I think the most likely outcome is, first of all, Iran becomes a forever war where the United States is just stuck there for the next 10, 20 years. There's really no way out because to abandon the war right now would be to abandon the American empire. And these past few months, we've seen that Trump is very intent on maintaining the American empire. And it's very possible that in the next few weeks, he orders an attack against Cuba in order to conduct regime change. And after Cuba, you might have Greenland, you might have Canada, you might have Mexico. So unfortunately, it seems as though America is very much intent on maintaining its empire primarily through the use of force. So that's my first prediction, that Iran is a forever war. My second prediction is that to maintain this forever war, the United States will have no choice but to institute a military draft for young people. Mm-hmm. So starting in December, as you know, all young men will be automatically registered for the Secret Service. And this is a precondition for the draft. So I think a draft is very much likely. You know, Palantir has called for a national draft. So there are many powerful forces behind the idea of a national draft. For Palantir, a national draft is great because it allows them to create a surveillance state. It allows them to track everyone's movement. So that's my second prediction. There'll be a national draft. My third prediction is that at some point we'll see the destruction of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. It'll be a false flag. It might be that an Iranian missile flies through Israeli airspace, and then suddenly, you know, the Al-Aqsa Mosque is imploded, very much like 9/11. And the Israelis will blame the Iranians will blame the Israelis. But if that were to happen, then we can see a religious war break out throughout the world.
Exactly. So Israel will all in with a false flag. I'm sure you've seen this, Professor. It's one of your data points. They've had top Israeli officials on TV say, we ought to blow up that mosque that's built on top of the Second Temple to trigger this religious war and force America to fully back us. I mean, this is crazy town.
Look, like all the elements are in place to create the third temple, right? So they have the red heifers, these perfect red heifers that were genetically engineered in Texas. They've been flown into Israel. And so they can be sacrificed to consecrate the grounds for the third temple.
Yeah, they already sacrificed one right by the temple.
Right. And they have conducted archaeological surveys of Isaac Moss for the past 2 years. And people speculate that what they're really doing is they're planting bombs for controlled demolition on the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Benjamin Netanyahu has visited the Al-Aqsa Mosque and said that it's entirely possible that the Iranians will blow this up because they are crazy people. You have a Jewish rabbi in Israel say, wouldn't it be wonderful if the Al-Aqsa Mosque was blown up by the Iranians, because then the Arabs and the Persians would go at each other, and these animals would just kill each other off. So you have, and then the Jewish something called the Temple Institute has already actually built the third temple brick by brick, and all they have to do is just move that temple onto the grounds of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So you have all the ingredients in place for false flag operation and for the destruction of the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
You mentioned Cuba. I was told by my sources, I'll leave it at that, months ago that when this Iran war fails, because the Pentagon believed it would, this is right out of Tampa, Florida, where it's all run, they said next Trump, if that fails, is planning to go into Cuba. Now, the CIA met with him 3 weeks ago. They said, we may give him a role, Castro, kind of like Venezuela, they leave the vice president in charge or something. But yeah, no, I can tell you right now, Trump is seriously considering an invasion of Cuba as a distraction from the Iran failure, and you were kind of predicting that. Give us your take on that, sir.
Right. So I think that what Trump didn't recognize was that a war against Iran would turn out into a war of attrition. He really believed when he first attacked Iran, that would be very much like Venezuela, where it's a decapitation strike, where the regime is extremely unpopular. And if you kill the Ayatollah, then the military would turn against the mullahs, the people would rise up on the streets, and then they would declare an American victory. So that's what Trump was hoping for. And now that it's turned into a war of attrition, Trump doesn't really like the optics of this. And so I can imagine the next few weeks that he declares an invasion of Cuba in order to secure a quick, easy victory in order to boost American morale. And quite honestly, if he were to attack Cuba, it's very hard for Cuba to resist an American invasion.
Well, you're absolutely right. So break down what you think this attack on Cuba might look like, sir.
Well, I think it might be a replay of Venezuela, where they surround Cuba. They're already embargoing Cuba. Cuba is running out of energy and of food. Russia is trying very hard to resupply Cuba and to support Cuba. But the reality is that Russia is too far away and Cuba is too vulnerable. And so I think that if you have an embargo and then you have elements within Cuba to stage a color revolution, and then if you were to do a quick special forces assault to decapitate the regime, then the government would fall very quickly.
I agree. Venezuela and Cuba are much easier than Iran. Well, looking at Iran, they know the negotiations always get broke. They know they make a deal, they just get bombed in 6 months. So because they're cornered, it makes them strong. That which doesn't kill you only makes you stronger, to quote Nietzsche. If they can control the strait, existential, force to withdraw U.S. forces, they don't have to make any deals, they get reparations, then they win. I don't see Trump agreeing to that, but they have no other course, but then they also hold us by the balls. So it really is like a Mexican standoff here. And I just hope the Iranians can give at least on some level to end this, because Trump now figures out he got set up so he can pull out of this.
Well, I mean, there are three major sticking points in these negotiations. They say they're 95% there. It's the last 5% that's very problematic, right? So the first sticking point, as you mentioned, is sort of Hormuz, where Iran wants sovereignty over the Strait of Hormuz. And America can't allow that because basically it would surrender the entire Middle East to Iran. So that's the first sticking point. Second sticking point is the nuclear issue, where Trump wants the uranium and Iran refuses to give it up. But the third sticking point, which is the most problematic, is Hezbollah, where Iran says that whatever ceasefire that we agree to applies to our proxies as well. So both to the Houthis, to Hamas, and to Hezbollah. And Israel would never, ever agree to stop this war against Lebanon. So I think...
And Israel, as you're saying, said they won't stop. And as soon as this peace deal started to go through, they started bombing Gaza and Lebanon yesterday. You're exactly right.
Right. So there's absolutely no way to a ceasefire, because if Iran were to give up Hezbollah, then Iran would be extremely vulnerable to attack. It would lose all credibility. IRGC would split up into a civil war, because you have one faction that would never, ever give up Hezbollah. And so there's really no way for the United States and Iran to come to a ceasefire.
By the way, you just hit a key there, because I've read that over the years, a decade studying Iran with top CIA analysts I've talked to. They set it up where it's not vertically integrated. It's parallel. That the mullahs told them, if somebody tells you give up, kill them. They're not giving up.
Yes.
Because they're totally exactly right. Compartmentalized. They're not. That's why they're so strong.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So they have something called the Mosaic Defense right now, where the IRGC is divided into like 31 separate command and control centers. You have 31 provinces. Each province is independent. So you don't have a leader in place. What you have is an ideology. What you have is an eschatology. And so there's basic principles to this eschatology, which includes to defend the proxies at all costs.
So we have two ideologies, end of the world, Jewish messianic behavior versus Shiite great Mahdi behavior. Yeah, so this is dangerous.
This is dangerous because both are winning for the coming of the Messiah, right? So the Jews are winning for their Messiah, and then the Iranians are winning for the coming of their 12 Iman, who will lead them to victory against the Antichrist.
If you were Trump, give the president advice. People listen to you. What would you tell him to do? Because we know he looks for a face-saving way to get out of this, which I get. If we don't have face-saving, the dollar dies. We're screwed. We're in a very dangerous position. So how do we face-save?
If I'm Trump, what I would do is convene a meeting, and I would invite China, I would invite Russia, I would invite India, right? This is what's called a C4. I would also invite Japan, and this part of this C5. And this is what Trump wants to do as well. The reason why is that as long as these nations agree to a new world order that's multipolar, and they agree to share power, then it's entirely possible to come to a ceasefire in Iran. And that, I think, would be the best move for Trump right now.
I agree, because, I mean, point blank, Israel's the problem here. They're the expansionists. They're out of control. But they just won't give up. So what happens?
Well, I think that Trump is stuck where he is because the Zionists are able to exert tremendous political control over the United States. So look at Thomas Massey, who was an extremely popular congressman in Kentucky. His constituents loved him. He was very charismatic, very articulate, and he was a very principled man. And then the Zionists spent about $35 million and they put up this no-name individual who was very camera shy, who had absolutely no real ideology, and he won. And not only did he win, but he won by quite a lot. It was a 10-point victory.
Yep.
So, unfortunately, this shows you the power of the Zionists in America.
But they exposed themselves in the process. Professor, I want to come back and just, you have the floor. Where do you want to go? The weird fake alien invasion, they got all these wild cards going. Will Israel do a false flag? What's going to happen? We'll talk about it all straight ahead. Stay with us and share those live feeds now with our special guests. Professor John Shui Ken is our guest for another 26 minutes. Can't wait to get him back for a commercial-free podcast in the near future where you can send us all the points he wants to get to. But just in the time we have, I've watched so many of your lectures, so much what you break down, I agree with like 95% or more of it. And you actually teach people, bring a lot of angles. For people that don't know, the world's in a major turning, a major time of change. The elites are trying to reposition. We've been talking about Trump and China and Russia and where all this is going. The EU is in so much demographic decline. They need a war, they say, to try to just survive. And even Elon Musk, 2 years ago at the World Government Summit, put on by the World Economic Forum, said, normally when there's a big turning, we have a war. We can't do that now with 10 billion people and all these weapons. We got to stop. We have to transcend this. But the elites don't ever stop doing that. They just mass more wealth to themselves, which actually then hurts their overall wealth because there's not real wealth there for them. How would you describe the moment in history we're in, and then all the alien invasion hype and all the culture wars that are going on, just big picture, you, as a human alive on this planet, where you think humanity is, what the general public can do, and then just, because you're very polite, keep stopping, so I jump in, which is a great banner, but I want to hear you just go with an assessment to millions of viewers right now of where you think we are and what you think we should do.
Right, so we are at a time in history which is basically imperial decline. We've had many imperial declines before in the past, Rome, Athens, Persia. And there are three major symptoms of imperial decline that is leading to all the chaos in the world. So the first symptom of imperial decline is something called elite overproduction. And this is a phrase coined by the historian Peter Turchin. And his argument is that what leads to wars, revolutions, and civil wars is the fact that you have too many elite competing for too few positions of status and power in the world. So you can argue that right now there's a civil war going on in Washington, D.C. between the old guard, financial, global oligarchs as represented by Wall Street, and a new guard, Silicon Valley tech bros who want to bring in an AI surveillance state. And they're all competing to control policy and financing in Washington, D.C. So that's one symptom of our age, elite overproduction. The second symptom of our age is overfinancialization, where too many people are in debt and the elite use debt as a mechanism to control the people. And so unfortunately, America no longer makes things, it just gambles. You look at young people nowadays, they spend all their time on OnlyFans, they spend all their time on gambling with cryptocurrency and on Polymarket. They're looking to get rich. And so over-financialization has led to corruption, it's led to debt, and it's led to complacency. And the third symptom of an age of imperial decline is a demographic crisis. We have too many old people, not enough young people. So young people nowadays refuse to have children. So the fertility rate all around the world, it's collapsing, especially in Southeast Asia. If America didn't have immigrants, then America would also face a demographic crisis. So these are the three symptoms of imperial decline. And unfortunately, the elite, who are not that smart, who are not that forward-looking, who are not that strategic, they're trying to basically put out the fire. And so that's why you have this massive immigration into the Western world in order to solve the demographic crisis, in order to solve the fiscal crisis a lot of these nation states are facing. That's why you have these wars going on around the world, because America is very much trying to maintain its empire and trying to force other nations to continue to buy U.S. treasuries. Otherwise, the U.S. would face a sovereign default crisis. And that's why you have so much discontent in America right now, so much inequality.
We aren't funded by foreign governments. We're funded by you. And I sell you great products that really work, so you love them. Methylene Red capsules are in. Clean daily energy, mental clarity, brain function, focus performance, cellular energy. No crash, no junk, no watered-down formula. Just clean daily support for people who want to stay sharp, focused, keep moving. Our Methylene Blue is the best. Our Methylene Red is proprietary. Our Bovine Colostrum is the best. Our Irish Sea Moss is the best. Our Shilajit is the best. We have the widest selection of Patriot apparel. It's all at thealexjonesstore.com. I am so excited about the Alex Jones Network. I'm so excited to expand it. The bad guys are in trouble. Hell, we might even get InfoWars back, but who knows? But I couldn't have stood against this tyranny and fought them without your support. But a lot of people, not the majority, but 20-30%, believe the propaganda of the national news that we're off the air. And friends, family, neighbors, people at the gas station, Alex, I'm so sorry you're off the air. I'm so sorry, you know, the Onion runs your company. They didn't get it a year and a half ago with the fake auction. They didn't get it this time. They're blocked in court. They're in a lot of trouble, okay? We're winning, but I need funds for the defense and the offense and for the network and for everything we're doing. And I need your word of mouth to tell your email list, your text message list, your neighbors, your friends, your family. Hey, Alex Jones is verboten, forbidden info. He knows what he's talking about.
Alex Jones called this years ago. Years ago.
Here is the URL, alexjoneslive.com. He's on weekdays, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Harrison Smith after that. We're going to bring more shows on, but we need your support, your word of mouth, your prayer. You are everything, and your financial support at alexjonesstore.com. So listen to me. We have ultramethylene blue tincture capsules and now the gummies that are a concentrate of already the strongest best methylene blue. So look out when you get them. But they're selling out, more coming in a month or so. We have plenty of the tincture and the capsules, but not the gummies. If you want them, there's probably 3 or 4 days left of them. Get them now at thealexjonesstore.com. Separately, I could do hours on this. Just go to Wikipedia even. Go to the UN website. Even our enemies admit it. There's an average 15 IQ point reduction in the West because of lack of iodine in the soil and in our foods. Iodine is so good for women, children, adults, pregnant women, but especially older people. But most iodine is a bound iodine to another element. Atomic means on the periodic table, it is pure. We're the only people that put out the pure iodine. And we have it, T3 trifecta iodine at thealexjonesstore.com. Get yours now. I got my iced tea right here. I take it about every 2 days. I'm going to take a dropper full of this bad boy. And this is so good for your brain, your clarity, your cells. It's essential. If you don't get iodine, you die. Again, you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you're dead. Don't have water for 4 days, you're dead. Don't have food for a month or so, most person dies. You know, unless you're super fat and you live 2 months or whatever. The point is, that's because you're not getting all the essential nutrients and vitamins. Iodine is one of the essential things. Look it up. And the number one cause of cognitive disability, officially, or even the World Health Organization, is iodine deficiency. So get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com and be the reason this network continues on and can expand. You're funding folks that fight for your future and our own futures together, trying to stop a new war, trying to stop new pandemics, trying to stop the left, trying to take back civilization. It takes funds to do that. So we sell great products. So it's a 360 win. The only way we fail is you don't take action. Take action now, thealexjonesstore.com.
Today we celebrate the first glorious anniversary of the Information Purification Directives.
Order is the only path to stability.
Compliance is the only path forward.
Alex Jones is a fringe voice and a crackpot. Our unification of thought is more powerful a weapon than any fleet or army on Earth.
We have created, for the first time in all history, a garden of pure ideology. War is peace.
On May 1st, 2026, Alex Jones will launch his new network. And you will see that the answer to 1984 is still and will always be 1776.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
We're told for 30 years humans are bad, cows passing gas are bad, life is bad, having a dog or cat is bad, it's killing the earth. Methane gas is evil, which we all know is a lie, it holds in the atmosphere. So you have to live under austerity. You can't have a car, air conditioning. Obama famously told Africans and Latin Americans and Middle Easterners before he left office. Suddenly they shift and end the Paris Accord and say, oh, no, now we need 100 times or 1,000 times the power for AI. So now don't worry about your power, but now AI is going to take our power. They're trying to bet everything on that. You have the WEF 2 weeks ago saying we need an AI savior. What are they really doing with AI, and why do they suddenly drop their carbon taxes and all that? And then just jump to this because they put so much into that.
Right. So the main issue with capitalism is that banks are able to print money as much as they want. Let's say it's an infinite money printer. And when you do that, then people no longer feel strained to work hard. And so the entire point of the economy is to exploit people's energy and to focus that energy into wealth creation for the elite. So you constantly need to manufacture crises in order for people to work hard. And so before, it was the fear of the Soviet Union, right? That's why we have to work hard, because we have to prove that capitalism is superior to communism. Otherwise, we'll all live under a dictatorship. And now they're going to manufacture an alien invasion in order to scare people. So the point is not to create fear. The point is compliance. There are different mechanisms in order to engender compliance.
And I totally agree with you, because you have all of the decades of pre-programming in movies, and Spielberg's movie out next month, all of this coming out at once. Clearly they're planning something big there. Why don't they be true aristocrats, as old lords in China and Europe, everywhere, said, make wealth, educate people. Our wealth isn't educated upward people. Only idiots try to feudalize them and control them and dumb them down, because now you've dumbed yourself down. This idea where under COVID, the elites doubled their money, the average person lost half their half. That was the elite actually losing their money. If I have $1 trillion in the bank, but there's nowhere to take a yacht or nowhere to go on a vacation or nowhere to own a beautiful home or nobody to take care of my horses, then I don't have the wealth. Don't they get the wealth is in people? I think it's robots. They fundamentally are retarded. There's something, but I get the fact that they're so sociopathic and predatory is how they were able to amass it. They're missing that link, that the wealth is in a rising tide, raising all ships. They don't understand that fundamental.
That's exactly right. So you have a situation where the elite got into power because of sociopaths. Sociopath means you lack empathy. Empathy means you lack imagination and the capacity to see things from a broad perspective. So they don't think about the larger social good. They just think about how to screw other people in order to accumulate more wealth. And so
instead of creating a great system that people invest in and get successful, like not defending Xi Jinping on all his issues, he's got major problems, but you can see under China's leadership and under his, they're specifically trying to empower and create wealth for the average person. Because obviously that's why you have a stable society. What world wants to fuck people? I don't even get it.
Yeah, so...
normally an empire will go pick one group to screw over and steal from. That's an empire. But no, this is like, let's screw our own people in the empire. That is a recipe for destruction.
So this is a very similar situation to the fall of the Roman Republic, where before the fall of the Roman Republic and the rise of Augustus Caesar and the rise of the Roman Empire, the oligarchs were in charge. And these oligarchs were the most depraved individuals you could possibly imagine. So millions of Romans had no land. And there were a lot of land controlled by the Roman state. And so Tiberius Gracchus, a reformer at that time, he had a very simple solution, which is like, you know, let's just give this state land that no one's using and give it to poor people so they can farm the land and create wealth for our economy. That makes complete sense. It hurts no one. It benefits everyone. And by making this proposal, Tiberius Gracchus was beaten to death on the streets of Rome by the senators, because from the perspective of the senators, everything belonged to them. So it just shows you how depraved, how suicidal the elite are.
They didn't get their wealth would increase by doing that.
Exactly. But for them, it's not about wealth. For them, it's about control. It's about power. It's about status. It's about being in control always, making the world revolve around them. And so America right now is facing a very similar situation. And we know historically what this means. It means that America has two paths ahead of it. It could either descend into civil war, or it could allow for the rise of a monarch or a king.
I was about to say, the next step in this is always out of the oligarch phase, we get a dictator phase.
And that's right.
Speak to that.
Yeah, no. Historically, this has been true. So you look at Rome, and you have this crisis where the oligarchs had too much power, and the people were suffering under debt, slavery, and inequality. And so this allowed for the rise of a dictator. The first possible dictator was Sulla, and then you had Marius, and then you had the rise of Julius Caesar, and then ultimately you had the rise of Octavius, which led to the Roman Empire. So
would you say what's the modern model of that? Would it be Putin first and now Xi Jinping?
Exactly, right? So Putin and Xi were able to rise because of these internal conflicts where the elite was too corrupt, were too rapacious, too predatory. And so you need a straw man in place in order to reduce their power. Otherwise, society collapses.
And a lot of Americans told me, I didn't agree with this model, but I said, they thought Trump would be that. That's a lesser two evils. Instead, he has now become a creature of Israeli special interest. And so he's neither a new Caesar or a new George Washington. Instead, he has hitched himself to really infamy, I think, destruction.
Well, unfortunately, Trump is very emotional. And whoever has access to him is able to plant ideas into his head. I mean, essentially,
he's trying to say 100%. The last thing he agreed with is what he did, which is the problem is he shifts like the wind.
Yeah, yeah. So unfortunately, you know, Tulsi Gabbard could have been a very important ally to Trump because they both want to reduce the power of the deep state. They both want to put the CIA under control. And now with her removal, then a great ally, a potential ally of Trump has been removed. And now he's just surrounded by these Israel first Zionists who are just spreading lies into his ear every single day.
How do you think they captured him? Because I don't think they had full control. He had Abraham Accords that were overall good, but he Netanyahu was the first person to congratulate Biden as a foreign leader. People know Trump, say he doesn't like Netanyahu. Is it Epstein? Or I've heard you say, clearly, I think Trump's compromised by it. If not him, it's people around him.
I don't think Trump is in the Epstein files. I would bet very good money that if you just open up the Epstein files 100% and just looked at it, then Trump is not at all compromised. This is a man who does not drink. This is a man who eats at McDonald's because he's afraid of being poisoned by...
No, he's a control freak. He's not in Russia getting pissed on by hookers. He's not being...
Exactly.
So how did he... So why did he do this?
Well, I think there are two factors at play. The first is that I think from an early age, Trump knew that he was born for a higher calling. He's been trying to become president of the United States for decades because he really believes that he can save America. And so he's always had this messianic calling deep down inside his heart. And I don't think people really appreciate that. That's why he's doing what he's doing, because he really believes that he has been put into on earth by God in order to save America. So that's one factor. And there's really this play to that, right? So if you go to Mar-a-Lago, and I'm sure you've been to Mar-a-Lago many times, there's a replica of the Ark of the Covenant. There's really this love Trump. Every time he goes there, they just flatter him to death and say that you are the Messiah. You know, you are Cyrus.
I totally agree. Whereas everybody else attacked him with what they wanted, they've learned to just kiss his ass.
Exactly. So that's the first factor. And the second factor is that if you go back to January 2021, he really was at, it's really seemed as though he was dead in the water because January 6th riots had happened. There was a second impeachment against him. His entire cabinet abandoned him. Even his daughter, Ivanka, and her husband, Jared, they sort of like moved away from him.
100%.
So he was really isolated. He was really isolated. And then there's that raid on Mar-a-Lago. So he really, really was under a lot of strain. And at this point, I could easily imagine Miriam Adelson and Benjamin Netanyahu, they reach out to him and says that, you know, we can help you restore your power, but you will have to adopt an Israel first agenda. So I think these are two very important factors to explain why.
No, I totally agree. That's what happened. They came to him and said, we can rebuild you. They didn't support him for real before. They came to him and he sees them as his savior. And so now he's in bed with them.
Yeah. So if you look at the Butler assassination, you know, like the ear, the blood on his ear, the fact that he lost his shoes. This is a strange coincidence, but if you look at the Bible, Leviticus, there's a passage in there that says that, you know, if the Jewish people are going to appoint a person for a special mission from God, okay, a Messiah figure, basically, then there has to be a ritual where there's a sacrifice, an animal sacrifice, and then that the blood from that sacrifice will then be dapped on that person's ear, right ear, as well as his toe. And so that Butler assassination was very similar to a ritual initiation.
Yeah, I agree. He didn't know, but it was a setup. I agree with that. He didn't know, and literally that's why they tackled it. It was all a big ritual, how they had the cameras, everything ready. But you couldn't fake it. His face, that was all real. I totally agree with you.
Yes, yes. So it seems as though Trump is being used by the Israelis for a special purpose, unfortunately.
All right. We got minutes left. You got to come back soon for an hour and a half, commercial free, and we'll put it on the main show because I really appreciate you really doing a great job. What else is on your radar people should know about and then is happening out there? And what you made a lot of predictions that have come true. What do you think is coming next?
Look, so I think one big thing that people are sort of ignoring because of this focus on these negotiations in Iran is Russia now is very angry at Ukraine. For the longest time, Putin has shown tremendous restraint. But a couple of days ago, the Ukrainians attacked a student dormitory in Luhansk, killing six students. And Putin was visibly upset when he was talking about this.
He's been very careful to only hit Ukraine at night and not use civilians. He got really pissed.
Exactly, exactly. And now we're seeing this massage barrage against Kiev. And so what we need to keep in mind is that there's really no way for the Ukrainians to defend against Russian ballistic missiles. And at any point, Russia can basically reduce Kiev into rubble. And the Russians have shown tremendous restraint in this regard. But now it seems that the gloves are off. It seems as though the special military operation will expand. And
well, that's what I was told 2 weeks ago by Victor Boot. He's got Putin's ear. He said gloves are coming off.
Exactly, exactly. So it seems that this war in Ukraine will expand. The Europeans will be brought in at some point. We may even see false flags attacks in European capitals in order to justify a draft, in order to justify sending special forces and volunteers into the front lines of Ukraine. But
I agree. We're entering the phase of false flags.
Exactly, exactly. And eventually there'll be a false flag in the Strait of Hormuz to justify an American invasion, something very similar to the Gulf of Tonkin, where an American battleship might be sunk to the ground, sunk to the into the sea. So it's a very worrying time. So I would say that's number one to focus on. Second thing I would focus on is Cuba, where I think that Trump is desperate for a victory. And Cuba is a very, very easy victory for him. But if he were to do that, then the entirety of South America would be up in arms, literally. And we can see more conflict between the South Americans and
plus,
Trump.
Professor, Trump. You know, history repeats. The CIA set Kennedy up with the Bay of Pigs. So my concern with these operations is they may want to embarrass him further. They could set him up in Cuba.
I mean, the reality is that it seems as though Trump has lost control over his own administration. It seems now that his administration is on autopilot. You have many elements within the American deep state that want these wars to because it benefits the military-industrial complex, because it extends their empire. So it doesn't seem as though Trump is really in charge anymore. It seems more like he's a scapegoat. And he has to constantly...
No, I agree. So they're preparing to set him up for what they do.
Yeah, well, I mean,
what do you make of Trump begging Xi Jinping to open the strait months ago, literally running to him for help? That shows desperation.
It does show desperation, but we have to remember that China is also very anxious to end this trade war. So I actually live in Beijing. I can tell you right now that the Chinese economy has been suffering for the past 5 years. And
I can tell you our inflation is on fire. We don't like it either. It is bad.
Exactly. 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 But right now, Chinese don't spend any money. And there's no consumer confidence. And there's a lot of money fleeing this country to the United States. So I think both countries are desperate for a solution. And, you know, Trump coming to China and being respectful, that I think is very good for U.S.-China relations. You know, Trump has said that he's going to pause this $14 billion arms shipment to Taiwan. And so if you just read Chinese news media, if you just look at Chinese social media, people are very optimistic that there's going to be a rapprochement between the United States and China in the next 6 months.
Couldn't Taiwan depoliticize it and just stay out of it for a while?
So the issue in Taiwan is actually much more complicated than people give it credit for. So I think that if left alone, then Taiwan and China will reunify peacefully, because right now both are heavily economically integrated. The issue is Japan. So last November, Prime Minister Takayuki of Japan said that Taiwan is core to Japan's strategic interests, meaning that if Taiwan were to reunify with China, then China could embargo Japan and block Japan's access to the Strait of Malacca, as well as Southeast Asia. And Japan is very much a an export, import, depending on the economy.
Do you think that's a well-founded fear or just an echo of World War II?
I think Japan has absolutely no choice but to remilitarize, given the current geopolitical climate. Japan can no longer depend on the United States for military
security. And we know
security.
With Japan, particularly it's economically cornered, they go to military.
They have a very strong military. They have the best blue water navy in East Asia. So China is primarily a land power. Japan is primarily a maritime power. So Japan will have to protect its trade routes. It will have to protect the Strait of Malacca. So what's going to happen, I think, is a reemergent, resurgent Japanese navy. And this is going to pose huge problems for China.
Because we study history, they'll immediately get in the fight.
They're already in a fight because before November, there were millions of Chinese tourists going to Japan. There were thousands of Chinese immigrating to Japan. These two nations were very close. And then because Prime Minister Takeuchi made these comments, you now have a massive reduction in Chinese flights to Japan. China is limiting rare earth imports to Japan. There's talk even of China not allowing Japanese flights to use Chinese airspace. So you can imagine if the Japanese are no longer able to fly through Russian airspace as well as Chinese airspace, this is going to massively impact their aviation industry. So unfortunately, I think that you will only see an escalation in rhetoric between China and Japan.
I agree. So bottom line, we're in a new world war. It just hasn't been defined yet.
I think we're already in World War III because people assume that war is where militaries clash. But just the nature of the world today with nuclear weapons, it's very hard for armies to actually go into the battlefield. World War III will be much more economical. It'll be really about strangling each other's economies, right? So the trade war between the United States and China was really a preview of World War III, but as things progress, and it seems very likely that nations deindustrialize in order to reduce their oil dependence, they remilitarize, and they become much more nationalistic.
Which is how World War II started with Japan. All right, powerful interview. Thank you so much for the time. Predictive History on YouTube, predictivehistory.substack.com. Professor, thank you so much. We've been very gracious. Please join us again. Thank you so much for your work for humanity.
Thanks, Alex. I love talking to you, and I hope to do this soon.
Yes, sir. God bless you, and thank you, and be safe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. We got a whole other hour coming up on this live Sunday transmission. Stay with us. Wow, that was incredible. That guy is smart. You want next level information? You just got it from the professor. God help us is all I can say. I mean, the fourth turning's here, and it's going to be one hell of a ride. Anybody telling you we're in boring times is a liar.
I just think we need to make it clear that there can be no comparison between the Black Lives Matter movement and what we saw on January 6th. There were very limited destruction of property and violence during the uprising.
I want to be clear in how I characterize this. This is mostly a protest. It is not generally speaking unruly, but fires have been started.
Oh boy! Oh boy!
They just threw something on fire, Chris, a firecracker.
No one should be destructing property and that sort of thing, but I understand the anger.
What you are seeing now, these images came and come in stark contrast to what we saw over the course of the daytime hours in Kenosha and into the early evening, which were largely peaceful demonstrations in the face of law enforcement.
On the six-year anniversary of George Floyd's death, yet another young life has been brutally extinguished, only to be met with a deafening silence from the establishment media. Henry Nowak, an 18-year-old first-year university student from Chafford Hundred in Essex, in the UK, was stabbed to death in the early hours of December 3rd, 2025, in Southampton, after a night out celebrating the end of his semester with friends, having consumed alcohol well under the legal limit. Nowak encountered Vikram Singh Digwa, 23, who was openly carrying a 21-centimeter ceremonial Shastar knife. Court testimony reveals Nowak was chased, stabbed multiple times, including a fatal chest wound, while Digwa had been boasting I am a bad man moments before the attack.
What do you think happened there then? Henry pleads for help. Neighbors overhear him saying, I've been stabbed. I'm dying. Shortly after this point, Digwa's family arrives on the scene. Video footage shows Digwa saying to Henry, no one stabbed you, bro. They mock him. Digwa's father asserts, quote, he's pretending, despite the video showing Henry literally prostrate, lying on the ground, bleeding, with Digwa's father then literally trying to prop him up. They tell police Henry's just a drunken racist, when his blood alcohol level, according to the toxicology report, was below the drink drive limit. Henry repeatedly tries to tell the police, quote, I've been stabbed, to which a male voice responds, I don't think you have, mate. Who said that? Digwa, one of his family members, or even more disturbingly, was it one of the police officers?
Nowak, desperately, not unlike George Floyd, crying out that he couldn't breathe.
The prosecutor alleges that Digwa did not seek help for the man, did not step in to say to the police, he has indeed been stabbed by me. He knew he had stabbed Henry. Henry was telling the truth, and he had stabbed him in the lung. And the man, as he lay dying, was saying, I can't breathe, because he'd been stabbed in the lung. The cops did not believe him, and his assailant, who was claiming to be the victim of, quote, a racial assault, of which there is zero evidence, stood there and watched him die.
A student on a night out is stabbed multiple times with a 21 centimeter long knife. He's lying in a pool of his own blood, literally drowning in his blood. The police come to the scene. Instead of doing everything that they can to save his life, they handcuff and arrest the lad because there's an accusation of racial abuse. This is a scandal. Will the Home Secretary come to the house and say what she's doing to investigate the way the police conducted this matter? And can we have a debate on two-tier policing, which is doing so much to undermine respect for the police and for the rule of law in this country?
What makes this case particularly galling is the near total blackout from major outlets that would otherwise amplify similar stories into national crises. Compare this to the wall-to-wall coverage of cases where the racial dynamics are reversed. Far too many to even count. Britain and Ireland must wake up before more Henry Nowaks are sacrificed on the altar of political correctness. The lack of sustained coverage isn't oversight, it's a choice that dishonors the victim and endangers us all. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network.
Have a massive Memorial Day sale that runs through Monday, running right now, on top of all the sales at thealexjonesstore.com. You get 25% off the top on top of every other sale that's there. That makes many items lost leaders, but they're so good, we want people to try the incredible products, the ultramethylene blue, the ultramethylene red, the incredible bovine colostrum, the zeolite spike protein chelation detoxification system. It's all there. That means the deals are already marked down, but on top of it, you're getting an extra 25% off. So stock up now. This is the time to load up. This is the Memorial Day sale, and it will not last. It ends Monday at midnight going into Tuesday. And on top of it, massive flash buy one, get one free sale is extended till Monday as well. Buy one T3 trifecta iodine tincture and get one of the very same size absolutely free. Get the ultramethylene blue tincture and get one free, or mix and match the two. So extend it until Monday. This is a bestseller. Both these are buy one, get one free, the very best iodine, the missing link, the very best methylene blue. Incredible. They synergistically work together. Buy one, get one free of the T3 or the methylene blue at thealexjonesstore.com. And on top of that, we are selling out of the new Freedom Shield wallets that are very, very popular, that are RFID and Faraday cage, hold 25 bills and 20 cards. Absolutely amazing. Limited edition with 1776 and or the other design, Don't Tread on Me. Those are about to sell out by this weekend. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And that funds this operation. And I salute you and thank you all for your support. And while you're on the site, It has the widest selection of Patriot apparel of every conceivable design and configuration. TheAlexJonesStore.com. You can also find the live feed of the show, the video and audio on the site as well. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Take action now to keep us on air and the fight against...
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.